Hi everyone, this is Betty and I'm reading from the News Gazette on Friday, August 7th. And so let's talk about the COVID-19. This is Restore Illinois Phase 4, Day 43. In the state of Illinois, we have 188,424 cases, which is an increase of 1,953, with 7,594 deaths, which is an increase of 21 deaths. Champaign County has 1,574 cases, which is 16 additional cases from over last week, and with 19 deaths. Douglas County has 106 cases, no increase, with 2 deaths. Ford County has 64 cases, that's an increase of 2, and they have 2 deaths. Piatt County has 49 cases, that's an increase of 1, with no deaths. Vermilion County has 216 cases, which is an increase of 14, and they have 2 deaths. Okay, on the front page of the News Gazette, it says, keeping close watch. In the 139 days since Governor J.B. Pritzker first ordered many of us to get back inside, we've learned that Zorba's had served its last gyro on Green Street, DeSteele had scrapped plans to start anew at Carl at the Fields, and downtown Champaign would be down one children's museum when things returned to normal. And as the coronavirus cases continue to pile up, so too could the list of closings. Here's what we know about the local impact of large chains that have filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection or plan to open soon, and this is a courtesy of staff writer Deborah Pressey. Pier 1. The chain filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy in February and all stores will be closing. The Champaign store at 2001 North Prospect is currently open from noon to 6:30 p.m. daily and in the midst of a closing sale. A date for the final closing has yet been set. J.C. Penney. The Marketplace Mall location isn't on the list of 151 locations set to close that the chain released last month. Liquidation sales are underway at stores that are closing, including 4 in Illinois at Bourbonnais, Carbondale, Freeport, and Mount Vernon. Men's Warehouse and Joseph A. Bank. The parent company of both stores, Tailored Brands, filed for bankruptcy protection Sunday after recently announcing it had identified 500 of its retail stores for potentially closures. The Joseph A. Bank store at 1749 West Kirby will close August 15th, assistant manager Jason Heath said. An employee at Men's Warehouse at 726 West Town Center Boulevard in Champaign referred inquiries to the parent company, which declined to comment. Tuesday morning, the Champaign store is open and isn't included on a list of locations set to close on the Champaign's website. In a letter to customers in May, CEO Stephen Baker said the chain plans to emerge from Chapter 11 bankruptcy in early fall with plans to close hundreds of underperforming stores to focus on higher sales locations. And so far, the Champaign store isn't on that list. GNC. The parent company, GNC Holdings, filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy in late June and said it plans to close 800 to 1,200 stores as part of its restructuring. The store at Marketplace remains open. So does the franchise store at Savoy Plaza, according to manager Adam Walker. Gordman's. The Champaign store at 1901 North Market Street is currently open. Its manager inquiries to the parent company, Stage Stores, which didn't respond. Stage filed for a Chapter 11 bankruptcy in May. Okay, another front page story is CU Festivals Hoping Crowds Move Online, and this is by Deborah Pressey. It won't be quite the same as strolling through a crowd on a warm summer day, listening to live music, sampling restaurant foods, and nibbling on ears of sweet corn, but two popular local festivals are proceeding in a pandemic-safer virtual way. Coming up first will be next week's 50th Taste of Champaign-Urbana, set to run August 10th through 16th. Up next will be the Urbana Sweet Corn Festival, set for August 21st and 22nd. Instead of Taste of Champaign-Urbana vendors setting up in Champaign's Westside Park, the Champaign Park District will be providing a virtual guide and sending people to participating vendors. Included are 14 food vendors, 9 artists, 4 bands, and 2 other businesses, all to be featured in the guide with descriptions of each, according to Zoe Southland Savage, the Park District's Special Events Manager. Some of the participating restaurants will have specials for Taste Week, but that will vary. Southland Savage said the Park District is leaving what participants want to offer up to each one rather than requiring them all to provide certain things. Times are hard enough, she said. The Urbana Sweet Pork Corn Festival will feature a cook it at home sweet corn drive through from 2 to 7 p.m. on August 21st or while supplies last. The drive through will be held in the Southwest parking lot at Lincoln Square, according to the Urbana Business Association. Executive Director Darius White said details on how much corn will be available were being finalized Thursday. We're hoping to have at least 100 dozen, he said. A $5 donation will include, along with uncooked sweet corn, a limited edition virtual festival tote bag, and a face mask. The drive-through is intended to get people out of their homes to still have a piece of the sweet corn festival. Day 2 of the festival will be a day and evening of videos of past performances available on the festival's Facebook page from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. White said there will also be spotlights on local businesses featured throughout that day, because the in-person Sweet Corn Festival years past helped remind the public of what businesses there are in downtown Urbana. We still want to highlight downtown businesses, he said. Those planning to go to the Sweet Corn drive-thru are asked to enter the Lincoln Square parking lot at the south entrance at Illinois and Broadway. Participants will be guided to exit the parking lot at Race and High Streets. So that's kind of interesting way to attend and look at the CU festivals locally. Okay, we have Ask the Administration. It's a daily question for the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District's Julie Pride. The question is, are local companies being encouraged to urge the use of masks by employees working outside but within 6 feet of one another? Noticing outside crews throughout the community, it doesn't appear that masks are being used even when workers are in close proximity. Her answer is, there has been guidance put out for outside employment. They are supposed to be wearing masks when they are working within 6 feet of each other. Your observation is correct and shows in our data. We have had many preventable outbreaks in construction and other outdoor work crews. It is also important that they do not share vehicles, eat lunch closely together, or take breaks together. Okay, also on the front page of the News Gazette, said U of I scientists who modeled virus say campus can reopen. And this is by Ben Zigderman. With twice a week testing, most classes online, a mask requirement, contact tracing, and an exposure notification app, University of Illinois researchers modeling the coronavirus think that infections on campus can be held below 500 this semester. Physicist Nigel Goldenfield and bioengineering professor Sergei Maslov, who developed models of the disease for the state and campus, said they think cases can be kept to a level that can be traced and won't overwhelm the hospital system. There's no single magic bullet to contain COVID-19 on campus, Goldenfield said Thursday during an online briefing. But a concerned suite of mitigation measures is effective in minimizing the risks to a level that can be contained by public health measures, and a hybrid campus reopening seems doable. With the U of I's measures, Goldenfield and Maslow's model predicts a surge of cases as students arrive and soon after. Nearly 400 people may have to quarantine because of possible contact with an infected person. It's very important that we have good hygiene as the semester gets underway, Goldenfield said. Throughout the semester, 150 to 250 people may be quarantined at one time, and the total number who have to quarantine could range from 500 to 5,000, modeling shows. It also shows that the number of active cases at any one time should remain below 100. Goldenfield said that there are limitations to the modeling and assumptions that had to be made. But he described their model as a worst-case scenario because it assumes people will spread it randomly rather than the more likely scenario of among certain friend groups. We did not model the friendship social networks of the students when they go outside and socialize in bars and restaurants, he said. So our calculation is, in fact, a worst-case scenario because we assume more mixing outside of the university. When classes start August 24th, about two-thirds will be online. The other third will have some in-person component. The U of I is requiring everyone on campus to wear masks and get treated twice a week, not treated, but tested twice a week. U of I researchers developed a saliva-based test that is being administered at sites around campus, and the U of I hopes to process 10,000 tests a day. When students and faculty enter buildings, they'll have to wear a mask and show their status on a mobile app, which is also being used to detect whether people have been near someone who tested positive. Goldenfield said this app will need to be adopted by at least 60% of the campus community to be effective. It's very important for us that people use the app, and therefore we have made a great deal of effort to ensure that the app will, if it gives you an exposure notification, you should take it seriously, because there's a very high likelihood that you might be, in fact, infected. Chancellor Robert Jones said he has made decisions based on the model, including the one to raise the testing requirement from once to twice weekly. The model indicated that with weekly testing alone, 35,000 people could get infected. But with testing every 3 days, the number of people infected would drop to almost 11,000. If we do all these things and if we take responsibility, we can mitigate the spread of disease and keep it at a level where we won't have a surge on our hospital system. We won't have a surge in terms of our isolation spaces that we've set aside, Jones said. Governor J.B. Pritzker has also been using the model, including in his decisions to issue the stay-at-home order in March. Goldenfield and Maslow's model predicted that without the order, more than 30,000 Illinoisans with COVID-19 could have died in April. Okay, this is on the national news. It says, dissolve this corporation. And this is by Michael Sysik, Larry Neumeister, and Lisa Marie Payne. And it says, New York D.C. Attorneys General sue NRA over alleged diverted funds. And this is out of New York. New York's Attorney General sued the National Rifle Association on Thursday, seeking to put the powerful gun advocacy organization out of business over claims that top executives illegally diverted tens of millions of dollars for lavish personal trips, no-show contracts for associates, and other questionable expenditures. Attorney General Letitia James, James's lawsuit filed in Manhattan State Court highlighted misspending and self-dealing claims that have roiled the NRA and its longtime leader, Wayne LaPierre, in recent years. From hair and makeup for his wife to a $17 million post-employment contract for himself. It's clear that the NRA has been failing to carry out its stated mission for many, many years and instead has operated as a breeding ground for greed, abuse, and brazen illegality, James said. Enough was enough. We needed to step in and dissolve this corporation. Simultaneously, Washington, D.C. Attorney General Carl Racine, like James, a Democrat, sued the NRA Foundation, a charitable arm of the organization that provides programs for marksmanship and firearm safety, accusing it of diverting funds to the NRA to help pay for lavish spending by top executives. In a statement, NRA President Carolyn Meadows labeled James a political opportunist pursuing a rank vendetta with an attack on its members' Second Amendment rights. You could have set your watch by it. The investigation was going to reach its crescendo as we move into the 2020 election cycle, said Meadows, who announced a countersuit in federal court in Albany, New York, that could set the stage for a drawn-out legal battle lasting well past November's election. The New York lawsuit made only civil claims, but James said the investigation was ongoing and any criminal activity discovered would be referred to prosecutors and the Internal Revenue Service. The NRA's financial troubles, James said, were long cloaked by loyal lieutenants but became public as deficits piled up. The organization went from a nearly $28 million surplus in 2015 to a $36 million deficit in 2018. The organization's prominence and cozy political relationships, James said, enabled a culture where nonprofit rules were routinely flouted and state and federal laws were violated. Even the NRA's own bylaws and employee handbooks were ignored. Though headquartered in Virginia, the NRA was chartered as a nonprofit in New York in 1871 and is incorporated in the state. Republican Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson defended the NRA, tweeting that if New York doesn't want it, the organization should move south where people respect and value the Second Amendment. Arkansas would be a natural home. The D.C. Attorney General has been investigating the NRA Foundation for more than a year. Racine said his agency's investigation determined that low membership and lavish spending left the NRA with financial problems, and so it exploited the tax-exempt foundation to remain afloat. Charitable organizations function as public trusts, and district law requires them to use their funds to benefit the public, not to support political campaigns, lobbying, or private interests, he said in a statement. His lawsuit sought not to have the NRA destroyed, but to have a court-appointed monitor supervise its finances and a trust created to recover money diverted from the foundation. The New York lawsuit also named LaPierre, the NRA CEO, and three other current and former executives as defendants, including General Counsel John Fraser, retired treasurer and CFO Wilson Phillips, and LaPierre's former chief of staff, Joshua Powell. The lawsuit accuses all four men of wrongdoing and seeks fines and remuneration. LaPierre, who has been in charge of the NRA's day-to-day operations since 1991, is accused of spending millions on private travel and personal security, accepting expensive gifts such as African safaris, and use of a 107-foot yacht from vendors, and setting himself up with a $17 million contract with the NRA if he were to exit the organization without board approval. The lawsuit said LaPierre, 70, spent NRA money on travel consultants, including luxury car services and private jet flights for himself and his family, including more than $500,000 over 8 trips to the Bahamas over a 3-year span. Some of the NRA's excess spending was kept secret, the lawsuit said, under an arrangement with the organization's former advertising agency, Ackerman McQueen. The advertising firm would pick up the tab for expenses for LaPierre and other NRA executives and then send a lump sum bill to the organization for out-of-pocket expenses, the lawsuit said. So that's what's happening with the NRA lately. Okay, On Top of the Morning by Bob Asmussen. By day, Tom Benefiel works in the transportation department for the Ridgeview School System. But every Friday night, Benefiel's inner Dr. Johnny Fever comes out from 6 p.m. to midnight on Gibson City's WGCY 106.3 FM. On August 21st, Gibson City native Benefiel celebrates the 25th anniversary of his weekly show. The 51-year-old has been at the station almost 30 years. It's been a lot of fun, Benefiel said. The biggest highlight was the day in early August 1995 that boss, owner, general manager Gary McCullough came to me and said, "Tom, I need somebody for Friday and Saturday night. Do you want to give it a go?" He didn't know if I'd be any good at it. Benefiel had a history with the station. His late father, Bob, worked at WGCY after retiring as a grade school principal in Gibson City. What's his music of choice? Benefiel likes to call it train wreck radio. It's pretty much everything. That's a change from his early days on the show. With an older audience back then, he stuck to mostly big bands and swing, music from earlier generations. Gradually, his audience became younger, so he started to mix up the selections. "I'm not going to play speed metal or death rap metal or anything like that. Now it's pop, rock, soul, anything from the 1920s through today, you name it." He plays the old staples, classic country music like Johnny Cash, etc. The term train wreck radio came from longtime supporter Jack Miller, a mechanic in Gibson City. He said, "I really like your show. You'll play something by Frank Sinatra, and then turn around and play the Monkees, and then Chet Atkins and Dave Brubeck. You'll do anything." So, sounds like an interesting station to listen to. That's Gibson City's WGCY 106.3 on FM. See, and what do we've got in history for today? In 1970, the nation's population center was to remain in Illinois, preliminary census figures showed. The center, however, had moved further west in Illinois. It may not take many more censuses for it to cross the Mississippi River. That hasn't happened yet. In international or national highlights, on August 7th, 1964, Congress passed the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution, giving President Lyndon B. Johnson broad powers in dealing with reported North Vietnamese attacks on U.S. forces. And here's interesting. In 1782, General George Washington created the Order of the Purple Heart, a decoration to recognize merit in enlisted men and non-commissioned officers. So that pretty much is the front page, or Section A of the News Gazette. So let's go on to section B, which is our county. And here's Jay Simpson's column. And he writes for the News Gazette on Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays. Title of his work today is "There's a Remote Chance This May Work." When I was at Purdue, I took part in remote learning. It involved classes mostly after team dinner and practice during basketball season. But I had a tutor, a coaching staff, and a bunch of teammates who made sure I got it done, and there was no coronavirus to worry about. The students in Champaign, Urbana, and Danville, among others, don't have that option. For them, this week's news that school will start off campus will present a number of challenges. Some parents can afford tutoring for their child, but a majority can't, let alone buy a computer. A lot of parents I know also work during the day, which will make it very hard to monitor if their children are actually doing their work or not. The kids that I'm most worried about are the ones who have trouble getting their work done when schools were open and classrooms were full. If they're struggling to do work in a building full of teachers, then there is a slim chance that they will do the work remotely. I understand the circumstances we are faced with, and the school districts are doing the best that they can in these strange times. I hope students will actually buy in and give remote learning a chance. It's important that they do, because unlike the spring semester at many schools, the grading this fall will matter. It wasn't that long ago that I was in high school, walking the hallways of Champaign Central. I realized kids have so much more entertaining things to do rather than do school remotely. Can it work? Only if teachers and instructors make the learning as interesting as possible. That may keep a lot of students focused and locked in until classrooms are open. And see what else we've got going on. We've got county market ad for Friday through Sunday, August 7th through 9th. And this is for Champaign, Rantoul, Monticello, and Gibson City locations. We have 99 cents a pound frozen split chicken breasts, and that's a value pack. We have 99 cent hamburger or hot dog buns, and those are 8-count bags. We have mustard potato salad that is deli fresh for $2.99 a pound. We have Prairie Farms cottage cheese, 24 ounces for $1.99. Blueberries, 2 for $5. And most of these, or all of these, takes your Max card. And again, we have the smoked barbecue meat trios. There's three pre-cooked meats per tray, and each tray is $10 each. And the names of the trays are the Big Boar, the All-Star, Pig's Fly, Triple Play, and Life's a Party. And that is pretty much the special ads for County Market for Champaign, Rantoul, Monticello, and Gibson City. And these are for August 7th through 9th. And that pretty much wraps up the first half of the News Gazette for Friday, August 7th. I'll take a short break and return with the second half.